Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to the Liberated Life podcast. It's such a joy to be back here with you, and I honestly can't wait for you to hear this episode. I have the most wonderful guest for you this week. Kat is a previous client of mine. She is also a friend and a fellow practitioner of this work. She is an absolute dream, and every time I'm in Kat's presence, I'm like connected back to the realness, the humanity, the zero filter trueness of what it is like to be walking this path, to be doing healing work, and to be honest, just being a human. We're talking all things healing, career changes, intimacy, sexuality, motherhood, womanhood, what it really means to feel free. Like, there's so much joy and juice and magic in this episode, so I can't wait for you to listen to it. So to introduce you to Kat, she is a holistic practitioner blending Western psychology with Eastern somatic and spiritual practices to support individuals to release trauma stored in their bodies. She had a 20-year career in the life sciences industry, ticked all of the boxes of what success looked like, but yet found herself numbed out, checked out of both her career and her marriage, and to be honest, her role as a mother too. Convinced that there had to be another way to live, she left her career to pursue her MSCI in psychology and began engaging in somatic healing practices such as conscious connected breathwork, Reiki, embodied dance, and rage ceremonies. Whilst the science of the MSCI supported her intellectual understanding of her own trauma and its impact, it wasn't until she began to experience somatic practices that her life began to shift. She's since become a Reiki master, has completed a year-long training with a renowned trauma expert, Gabor Mate, and is currently working towards certification in the somatic psychotherapeutic approach designed by Gabor Mate and Sataram. She's an absolute joy and a wizard and my favourite feral witch. I hope she doesn't mind me saying that. I hope you enjoy this episode, my lovelies, and I will speak to you very soon. Okay, so here we are with my wonderful, wonderful friend Kat. I'm so excited to be doing this with you, partly just because I love our conversations and also because I know that you have so much magic to share.
Well, we'll see, but me too. I'm really excited to just have a good chat.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, before we dive into everything, how are you arriving today? Like, how are you doing in yourself?
Yeah, a bit nervous. I've not done a podcast before. So that shows up in like jitters, but good. I think I was always just saying to you, like, the when you sent through the note yesterday about what the session would look like, there was a real performance monster that was like, right, let's spend the rest of the day engineering how this is going to look and how performative this is going to be. And that part of me is very much a lie, but I just choose to not listen and lean into, I just want a really nice conversation, because we always have such good ones when we've removed the performance mask and allow ourselves to be the kaleidoscope that sits underneath it, you know?
God, that is such medicine for me, because I'm doing this presentation this evening and I've had my performance monster coming out being like, okay, so Lucy, you need to like prepare all of the notes and learn it off by heart and know every single bit of timing and da-da-da, and it's like, or you could just turn up because you actually know all of this stuff anyway, yeah, and just talk.
Exactly. And I said the same thing. I was like, this stuff is in your body now. You've been doing it for a while. So how about you just trust yourself? That's new.
Yeah.
But it's a real, you know, I think you're similar in that I've been performing the good girl and the A student, and this is a long-term gig I've been living since I was about 6 years old. And so it will keep coming up and going, remember me? Do you remember how successful we felt for about 3 minutes and then we felt hollowed out? Mm. So I don't think that part of me will ever lie down, but I can at least walk next to it and be like, yeah, choosing a different way now. Mm. Let's just see how this goes.
Mm. I love that analogy of walking alongside a part of us. It's like, I for a long time had this idea that I would just get rid of all of these parts of me that I didn't like very much. It's like, maybe they can just come along for the ride. And also there's a benefit to them to a certain degree. You know?
Yeah, I think when you understand the function and how that's got you to certain places, you know, you can't demonize it.
No,
it's like, you know, that was a part of me, but I'm choosing not to live from that part anymore.
Yeah,
and it feels different and better in lots of ways and scary in other ways. And so let's just see.
I'm really intrigued because you've been on like
I feel in some ways like we've kind of lived parallel lives. Like when you were on the retreat and we were talking about like we'd both been to the same people and like kind of overlapped in various ways but didn't know each other. I'd love, you've been like on a big trip in terms of your career and coming into this work. And I wonder for you, when did you first realise that this work like was your calling really, or when it was kind of nudging at you?
I think when, not dissimilar to you, I did a yoga teacher training whilst I was still very much in a corporate machine of being like push, 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 perform, perform, perform. And I think I did my yoga training that way. Of like, I want to do all the poses and I want it to look like this. And I remember my teacher saying, you know, you walk around the class like a tiger ready to strike. And I was like, is that bad? Or it's a vibe. I'm not sure it's a yogic vibe. And then I got pregnant. So that it started to like open things inside me. And I very quickly closed it down because I was pregnant. And then it was like, well, now I have to be even more serious and even more successful because now I've got a mouth to feed. And so really it was only, I think, COVID, I think for a lot of people, and I could see it in my colleagues as well. We started to ask different questions. I think when you took away some of the shiny parts of the corporate world, like the shiny dinners and the shiny trips and all of the fun things that could be part of that world, when all of that was taken away, I was like, oh, I fundamentally don't think I like what I do. And I don't like myself in that world. And I was hitting all these like success measures and I just felt done inside and asked the question, can I do this for another 20 years? Because it was, I was midpoint in my career and I was like, I've got another 20 years of work. Can I do this for 20 years? And it was the loudest and hardest no. And we were in a pandemic and I had children and I just started a new job and I didn't really know what to do with that. So I always say we couldn't go out. So I went in. I went into like, why do I feel like this? I've ticked all the boxes of the career, the marriage, the children, the nice house, the nice car. And I felt just empty and broken. And I would flip from completely numb to hugely overwhelmed. There didn't seem to be much grey in the middle. And so I started working with a coach and it started to kind of slowly just ask some questions of like, why do I think and feel the way I feel? Is there another way to live? What does that look like? But really, and I started to do my master's in psychology part time and that started to open up some more knowledge doors, which was amazing because then you're like, oh, I've got all of this new information. Aren't I so clever? Now I understand. I'm like, and then I'm like, I have all this knowledge and I can see everyone's patterns. And until I started to go into the body, I was like, this is just another defense. This is another way to stop me from feeling the absolute hideousness that is inside my body that I keep numbing from, running from. It just made me realize that now I had language and an even firmer defense mechanism in my mind of like, well, I can tell you all of the ways in which this is my attachment. I experienced this as a child. This is how it shows up. This is what it means for my nervous system. I wasn't allowing myself to feel any of it because I was up here and being really impressive with all of my newfound knowledge in the healing world.
Honestly, you saying that, I'm like, it makes me laugh because I did it so much for myself. But I also used to like do it for other people. So yes. I would like, I'd be dating people that were really, really unavailable to me, like not meeting any of my needs. I'd be like, yeah, but they're like this because they grew up in this way. So they're avoidant and they have this thing and I just need to be gentle with them and blah, 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 blah. I was like, Lucy, or you could just feel the fact that they're not meeting your needs. Yeah. You need to leave and you're scared of leaving. But yes. I was like psycho babbling the whole thing. Well, it's all of these attachment patterns.
It's really sneaky and you feel it really is like a spiritual ego thing. I think for me it was very egoic. Like now I had language and data and droves of it. Like there wasn't a book I wasn't reading on every aspect of like my relationship, my parenting. I was reading all of the books. I wasn't allowing myself to feel any of the things that I was running from. And so it just got to the point where there was no amount of affirmation, no amount of gratitude journaling that was suppressing what my body was experiencing. And so I left my job. And predominantly that was I was financially able to do that. I had some money to be able to do that. But it was more when I started to do my master's, I did genuinely love the things I was learning about because I love people and I love understanding behavior and understanding like what goes on with people and why people do certain things. And so it was really intellectually very stimulating. And it just made me realize how bored I was in my day job. And it was like my day job is getting in the way of me studying something I really genuinely love. And so that was the push. But it was only when I started to do body work, so breath work with you, I was in a somatic healing program where there was embodied dance and rage ceremonies, and I was having Reiki, and yes, I was having talk therapy, but it wasn't until all of this like body work that I was like, oh God, I have been offline for most of my life, like genuinely, like just disassociated for lots of reasons, none of which I think you want to explore in this podcast, but it wasn't no amount of intellectual understanding of, oh yes, I can see why I'm disassociated and why feeling into my body feels so horrendous. Actually doing it was the thing that I was like, oh, there's no amount of talking that is gonna heal. I have to face into just the unprocessed junk that was in my body and driving lots of my decisions and why I did spend so much of my time numbing, either chemically or in other ways. And so it was only when I was able to like unpack all of that, that you meet kind of this new version of yourself of like, oh, this is what life is supposed to feel like.
Yeah.
Which sounds shiny, but it's not, because a lot of it is you have to feel the hard stuff first, unfortunately.
It's really interesting you saying that, because it's like twigged something in my mind that I've kind of thought before but have never really voiced, that I think for people who are quite smart and quite like academically capable, professionally capable, it can be really difficult to start the journey into body work, because for me I became so overly obsessed with my mind. Like my mind has got me so far. So I was like, I understand all this stuff, I understand all of the theory, so like why do I need to do anything else, because I understand it. And in all honesty, because my mind was so strong, my defense mechanisms to anything that seemed vaguely woo-woo were so big. Like I remember I did my yoga teacher training, and we had to read the Bhagavad Gita as part of the training. And I remember having this weird moment, because I went into yoga teacher training for the same reason as you, that I was like, I basically want to be one of those people on Instagram that can do I was like, that will make me sexy and probably more attractive to men. So it's like, I'll do it for that reason. And then I was reading the Bhagavad Gita, and I honestly had this moment that I was like, oh my God, is yoga a spiritual thing? And I was like, oh God, like, I don't think I want to go into this. Like, is it spiritual? Like, have I lost the plot? Am I going crazy? And it was like, I was like, wow, my mind is so strong. And I still now, like, God knows how many years in, have moments of like, but have I gone crazy?
Yeah, I'll just say, I'm like, is this just a giant midlife crisis? Just get a Ferrari. Like, at this point, it'd probably be cheaper, definitely easier. I often say, I just want to take back the red pill. Like, just let me take it again. I want to unsee all the things I've unseen. And because I'm like, is this some weird, what, like, because I think when you see it, you're like, you can't go back. That's the problem. And then you're faced with like the challenge of change, and nobody likes change because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah,
the same. Interestingly, I reread my yoga notes, largely because my cat peed all over my yoga book. So I he's got dementia, bless him. So I had to rewrite them all. And there was so much in there, like beyond the poses, that just did not register at my state of awareness. I was like, oh, it's all in here. Like the eight limbs and the energetics and the spiritual piece. I just couldn't absorb it. I just wrote it down. But it didn't land at all in my consciousness. And I reread it. I was like, okay,
I was just on the, like, I can just create an Instagram account of me doing sexy poses. But I wonder when, because you said just then that it's like, oh God, there's a point where you wish you could take the red pill again.
Yeah.
What kept you going?
Two things. The thought of death, which is a bit dark. And the reminder of just how miserable I was.
You can't skip over. Can we go slightly more into... Yeah, the thought of death and the reminder of... No. Thought of death. Can we go into what that was about? Why did that keep you going?
So it's linked to the second point. Like, there is such... I really respect the idea that a familiar, comfortable hell is actually easier to walk than an uncomfortable... I don't know where this is going to go. Like, so I knew what it felt like to be comfortable, safe and miserable. I knew what that felt like. And so I think I knew I could always go back there if I wanted to, like that might still end up being the case. Mm. And that was okay. So if I really wanted to go back to that familiar hell, I could. So that was like, okay, so how about we just try and see if there's something else? And then this idea that we're sold of like, you tick all these boxes, you climb this ladder, then you retire and you live like this. Neither of my parents got close to retirement. My mum died when I was 15, like unexpectedly, she was super young. And my dad died after complications of a motorbike accident when he was in his mid 50s as well. So both of those, obviously huge impact on my life, but is a real acute reminder of you just don't know. Mm-hmm. And we wander around like we will get to experience all of these different stages of life and you might not. And so if that is your reality, which it is everyone's, but we choose not to look at it, then would you regret not doing this on your deathbed? I think that has always been like, that's the thing that keeps pushing me of like, no, this is obviously incredibly uncomfortable. Some of it's terrifying. I don't know what I'm doing. But would I regret not doing it and not trying it on my deathbed? Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So that keeps me going.
It's so interesting that you bring that up, because I remember when I first left banking, I can't even remember who the guy was, but some guy contacted me and he was basically putting together this documentary of like people that had made interesting life choices and trying to understand why they'd done it. And I wrote this whole thing before in my performance. I was like, okay, I'm going to write this whole thing of why I did it. And it was initially quite a surface level thing of like me, why I left banking. And then I sat with it and I was like, no, what is the real reason here? Like, why am I wired this way to think bigger than me sitting in this job that I don't like? And it came back to death.
Yeah.
I was really, really fortunate that I didn't have death very, very close to me growing up. But I had been to like 20 funerals by the age of 20.
That's a lot.
So it was like I'd had a lot of death around me, and friends lose parents very suddenly and very tragically, and losing friends as well who were obviously really young. And I had the same thing that I was like, what are we? I used to honestly be like, what are we all doing here?
Yeah.
Like, to me, I'm like, there must be something deeper going on that I'm unaware of, because I do not believe for a second that we are meant to exist as humans in this level of disconnection, in this level of like unhappiness and suffering. There has to be more than this.
Yeah. Yeah. It was exactly the same for me. And I think COVID, maybe it bubbled all of that up to the surface, because death was such a part of the conversation. And I turned 39 in COVID, which was the age my mum was when she died. So that was obviously a big thing as well. I always had this story of, I'm going to go the same way, because I look like I'm cut out of her, like I look like her. And so I just had this unconscious story of like, I'm just going to die young. That's just going to be my story. And then I didn't. And I was like, oh, now what? What if I get to do it differently without that assumption? And it was just, I think COVID did just bubble up some of those bigger questions for lots of people. And I could see it in like my colleagues as well. Lots of them looked at me like I had two heads. They were like, what are you doing? I don't know. I just know I can't do this anymore. but I could see it was triggering for lots of people because they had this niggle as well of like, oh God, I'd love to do something like that. But what about like your mortgage and what about the children? And I was just like, yeah, but what about if I die and I didn't try? Like that is a much bigger loss than I might have to not go on a few shiny holidays in that year, or I might have to give up my spending on things that I actually don't need and be a bit uncomfortable that way. Fine. Like at least try and see.
What was it you were seeking?
I think the word that just came up was depth. I just felt broken, to be honest. And I knew I couldn't do what I was doing anymore of just keep pushing through all of the things I was feeling or starting to feel and running from it. At some point I had to like look into it. Like I think it's so enticing to keep pushing for the next thing. And like your career path is very much like designed that way. I remember I just got this new job in the same company that I was joined in COVID. And I'd been in this role for like, and I'd wanted this role for years. I was like, oh, when I get there, then it will feel so good and I'm going to love it. And I was in it for 3 months. I was like, oh, this is not what I wanted it to be. This is not what I thought it was. Yeah. And my boss at the time sat down and was like, right, you've been here for 3 months. I start mapping out your next two roles. And I just was looking at her like nodding, yeah, could do this, this and this. And it was like the inside of me just started to fire up and be like, if you stay here, this will be like a death. Yeah. It might not be a literal death, but it will be a metaphorical one, a spiritual one. Mm. You cannot stay here. You can stay here for safety. There's clearly a track being made for you to tick all these boxes. And I just looked around and I like, similar to you probably, life science is a very masculine environment. Just looked around at the women and was like, is there anyone here that I want to emulate and feel like they're living their best lives and they feel the whole in this existence? And I just couldn't find anyone. I was like, this is not good. So my therapist called it, you have to let go of the rock. You don't know where you're going to go, but you know, you can't hold on to this rock anymore.
Yeah.
You're probably going to get hit by a few rocks along the way and that's going to hurt. But holding onto this rock, gripping it so tightly is actually going to kill you.
Yeah.
And it felt like that. It really felt like that. And so I was lucky in the sense that I had some finances to be able to say, I'm just going to leave and see what happens.
I find when you were just talking about that piece of like when in the corporate world, how it's very much set up of like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? We're constantly chasing the next thing. It's quite interesting because I obviously left banking before COVID. So there was this whole thing of like, COVID's going to be this period of great awakening and everyone's going to have these life changes. And I didn't really understand because I'd kind of gone through that the years before for whatever reason. But I still had, even though I had left the rat race as such, there was still this aspect of me where it was like, when I get X, I will be happy. And I didn't realize that it was running in the background. And in banking, it was a lot to do with money. And then I got to certain amounts of bonus payments or whatever. And I was like, this isn't doing anything. So then I started hooking onto romantic love and was like, oh, when I get a boyfriend, then I'll be happy. And then I met Thomas. And yeah, there was a period of like limerence where I was in that like weird bubble when you have loads of hormones and everything's all great. And then like a few months in, I was suddenly like, oh, wait, like I can't, basically you can't escape yourself.
No.
You can't escape yourself regardless of whatever you do. You still can't escape yourself. And like, I'm currently staying in this beautiful house in the Cotswolds because we're doing this house sitting situation. This house is like the most insane place you could ever imagine. And I go upstairs and there are all these books of like, which are clearly, I mean, I don't know this woman, so this is all my own perception, but lots of like kind of trying to find myself books the place. And I'm like, it doesn't matter what you have.
Yes.
It's like, it's all a fucking inner thing, people. We can keep chasing, but we can't escape the pain inside of us. Like we can't.
It's so true. It's such an inside job. Like, and I think the world is designed to build outside in. right? So get all of this stuff on the outside and the inside will feel good. But actually this next phase of my life is like, how about if we built from the inside out, what would that look like?
Yeah.
And it does, but unfortunately, if you've got a background with trauma, which I'm yet to find anyone who doesn't, in whatever guise that looks like, big stuff, small stuff, basically just not being met where you were, you have to look at that, like, because that's where the disconnection is coming from. And it might be one point of disconnection or it might be multiple. Unfortunately, my case, I've got a lot of material to be to be working with, which is a deep joy. But I find, like, it is such, it's so true. It's annoying and it's cliched, but it is such an inside job. And the biggest connection has to come from that connection to yourself first, and not in a shiny sunshine and lollipop-y way. Unfortunately, there's a lot of shadowy parts to all of us that can be pretty ugly. But if you don't look at that, you don't look at where it's coming from, you're just fooling yourself.
I actually want to talk about these, like, the maybe uglier parts of us, because not because I see you as someone who has like, but I just feel like we've had lots of conversations about like the importance of being brave enough to share the whole of ourselves, and how a lot of the healing world and the personal development world is very, especially in the female space, is very like soft feminine energy, like gentle, receptive, blah blah blah. I wonder, like, what is your journey with that in showing your true self or your whole self?
I think I would love to say, oh, it's been so shiny. I've had all of these like beautiful spiritual moments where I've really met the goddess within. No. The goddess is within, but at the gates of the goddess is these demons that have their own agendas and scripts, and it's the pushing away of the parts of yourself that are ugly. So for me, it's true around triggers. Like, triggers are real doors in of like, why am I being triggered by this person? Or why am I feeling all of this judgment? What is that coming from? And even just some of your behaviors, why am I doing that? Unless you're willing to look towards that, I think you're bypassing them. Mm-hmm. And like, even just yesterday, I had a session with my therapist, and I'd been having these like pretty dark thoughts that I was running from. I was like, I don't like these thoughts, like, where are they coming from? And I was like, well, I'll just keep going to the gym and hoping that they just go away. And I was like, I really don't want to look at these. But I know from myself, whenever I'm getting like intrusive thoughts, there's something coming that I need to look at, and I really don't want to. But rather than running from them, which is what I'd spent a lot of my life doing, I now know that actually when you dive into the shadow work, there's gold beyond it, right? It is guarded by shadowy stuff, but at the core of it is there's gold to be integrated there. Mm. And so we did it yesterday. And I remember at the start of the session, she was like, look, we can look at this or we can look at this. If we look at this bit, which is the shadowy thoughts that you're having, you don't want to have because they're like really dark and not pleasant. And I was like, I'm absolutely terrified. I can feel the terror in my body to start looking at why these kinds of things are coming up in my mind and what I'm running from. And she's like, well, we can look at that. Or we can look at the, I was like, let's just look at it because I know there's something there. And it's always what's underneath, right? And it was around, I don't want to go into it because it was a deep session. I'm still integrating, but just this idea of like, why can't I get into my body in intimate moments? I'm still very much in my head. I find it, some of them I still find terror being in my body in particularly in intimate moments. And we went on this beautiful journey through, beautiful, it was harrowing. It was harrowing.
Trying to make it shiny. It was like
snot pouring out. There was a really dark visual of a Grim Reaper type character who was whipping me, saying, stay in line. We need discipline. I'm not like this. I would have been 60 years ago, I'd be in a clink. But anyway, we went through it. And all it was just this battle with my body from a very young age of being in my body was never safe. It was never acceptable. My body was always too big. It was never the right shape. Like, it's much easier to be in my head and talk about this than actually feel how painful that was as a child for my body to be like objectified and criticized and, you know, violated from a boundaries perspective. But that's what is, she was like, of course this is hard for you to be in your body because you're going up against that. But knowing what you know now about body work and breathing into it, like I can get in there, but it takes some work to get out of my head to get in there. But it was, I could have kept running, numbing, and I this is not a one and done, as you know, I will have to keep revisiting this part of me that is like self-loathing. But beyond the visual of the Grim Reaper character that was whipping me was just this little girl. Yeah. Who was naked and broken and ashamed and sad. And when I met her, which is obviously me, like, it's horrible. The grief, the shame, the sadness. But if I don't meet her, she will never become free, and I will never feel the freedom in my body, which I know is possible because I felt it, but it's not always there. And so it is this, like, that's shadow work, isn't it? It's like going into those moments of like, that is a real thing that is still within my body that needs to be processed and supported. Mm. And when it's met with compassion, not more shame, like that's the healing. But it was only in facing these like really aggressive, intrusive thoughts that I felt had been beating me for like a few weeks. Which I would normally have ran from historically, like years ago, or gone to the doctor and be like, I have all these intrusive thoughts, can you give me some pills? Mm. Now it's like having the bravery to be like, I need to look this in the eye and see what's there. But that's only after like lots and lots of work around shadow stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's not shiny. Like, it was knotty, a mess. I felt sideways for the day. I felt a bit empty. But as I said to you at the start of the call, like, I feel much lighter today.
Yeah.
That's the point. It's just another layer.
It is. And it's this whole thing of like, that life is inherently healing. Like, yeah. The things that show up in life are trying to like bring stuff up in us to transmute. Yeah. And if we keep turning a blind eye, it's like we're literally compounding all of this stuff through our life. And then it gets harder and harder and harder. And I think I had this belief when I came into this work that I was like, oh, once I've done enough work, then it's just done. And it's like, no, because life continues to bring stuff up so that you can transmute stuff. Yeah. And it's in meeting, because I think there's a lot said about like working with the inner child, and the inner child can be so sweet and it's so innocent and like holding that inner child. And it's like, yeah, but we forget that there's often a massive protector that wraps around the inner child, and you have to get through the protector gently and with love to get to the little one. And the protectors are often, as you mentioned, like Grim Reaper type characters, or like mine are often like incredibly judgmental of other people, or like really shaming. And you saying the thing about intimacy, like for me, I had this whole period, and thank God I'm in this work, because I would have like imploded so many situations in my life if I hadn't been. I used to have this experience after sex of being like so repulsed.
Yeah.
And I would like, I'd project that onto my partner in my head. I'd be like, oh, like I couldn't have you near me. Like, in my, I just was like so repulsed by the whole thing. Yeah. And then when I looked into it, I was like, I'm so ashamed of my own sexuality that I am projecting this onto someone else. And this shame is running so much of my life, but it was manifesting as judgment. So just like me judging everyone. And I had this realization a few weeks ago of like the level of, because there's a lot said about people who are very open and say like, oh, I feel broken. I feel like there's something wrong with me. I did have that to a certain degree, but a lot of mine came through as grandiosity. So it was like, I'm better than everyone else. Like, no one can ever meet me. Men are rubbish. Like, everyone's like basic and not clever enough. And it's like, it's the same fucking thing. I feel ashamed of myself. So to protect myself from that little girl that's feeling really ashamed and not feel that, I'm going to create this whole weird persona about being better than people.
It's so But how amazing that you're willing to look at that and be willing to say, well, hang on, what's happening here? I'm the common denominator. Because I kept finding like situations would keep reappearing and I'm like, oh, it must be them. I'm like, oh, but I keep meeting this same part of myself in a different guise. I'm the common denominator. Like, let's look at that. And it, the same for me, like, even my lovely husband, we've been together 13 years and I really, we've been on a journey, bless him. Neither of us are the same people that got married. And I think it's Esther Perel that says, I've been married 3 times, but it just so happens to be the same bloke. Mm. And it's the same. I feel like we're in our second marriage. But in terms of our intimacy, the more I go into this work, the more I'm meeting a new layer within this. And there is moments where I'm like, don't touch me. Mm. Whereas previously I would have just muscled through that or checked out and have gone through the motions. But now I'm like, there's something for me to look at here. And so rather than run from it, we can converse about it, which has been a journey all of in itself, and be honest about it, that actually if you've got stuff in your background and in this society on female sexuality and body, who hasn't, frankly, at this stage, like that is going to keep showing up for you to look at. And you can keep saying, you're disgusting, go away from me. Or you can be like, okay, well, this is me having this experience. Maybe this is an invitation for me to look at this.
Yeah.
And it's the same. It's like whenever I go into it, it's like, yeah, of course I'm having that reaction.
Yeah.
How about I bring some compassion to myself and take it slow and experience it in a different way?
Well, I saw this really interesting stat yesterday. I can't remember who the person is that I follow on Instagram. It's like a couple that do sexuality work. And she'd ask her audience, she has an audience of like 3 million people or something, like how, like proportion of women that actually enjoy like penetrative sex.
Yeah.
And it was 9%.
Oh.
And like, you can look at that and think like, okay, women don't enjoy penetrative sex and look at it at a very baseline level of like, okay, that's not where we're most sensitive, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, no, this isn't what's going on. It's like, we're all really dissociated.
Yeah,
we're muscling. We've been learned to like muscle through, so we have no sensitivity in our bodies, and we're just like, well, women don't enjoy sex. It's like, no, we're just really just, yeah.
And we're not willing to say in the most intimate moments, like, no, or I want to do it a different way, or I'm in my head, right? Sometimes I have to actively get out of my goddamn head and allow myself to experience my body. But if you have scripts in your mind that I'm not, my body's disgusting, it's not for my pleasure, it's been manufactured for other people's pleasure, you have to look at those, because they will just keep continuing to run your life. But yeah, so for me, I think this is definitely a space I'm looking at more, because I know there's more to be had. And like, I'm blaming you largely because of that bloody retreat.
Kat, you're meant to be saying nice things about retreat.
But it was such a womb awakening. I was like, do you remember that whole week? I was like, what is happening with that part of me? It's like it's just suddenly going, you need to look at this. There's stuff you need to look at here. And the whole week was just very woomy for me, which, again, 20 years in the life science industry is really hard for me to say out loud because it sounds so woo. And I'm like, well, no, it's anatomically.
It's an organ.
Part of you, and energetically, it's also a part of you. And spiritually, it's a part of you. So, yeah, that whole, I feel like this part is it personally is an edge I'm trying to explore more, because it really screamed during that retreat in so many ways. And I can see it's like a space for so much growth for me.
I'm actually intrigued about this womb piece, but I don't want to talk loads about the womb stuff. I actually want to talk about motherhood, because I'm so in awe of you when I look at you like doing this work, leaving your job, being a mum, and recognizing like the huge rite of passage that it is to move into motherhood that is completely ignored by our society.
Yeah.
Like, what has that journey into motherhood and trying to mother through a lens of consciousness or whatever shown you?
Yeah, it's interesting. My daughter's 10 and my son is 6. weeks. And in the same way our marriage, I feel like we're in our second marriage, I feel like my kids are getting a different mother. So like, I look back now at getting up super early, getting ready for my corporate job, getting them out of the house, getting them into their various institutions. They would then go into after school club. I would then pick them up, and my husband would pick them up at like 6, 6:30. We would have an hour to essentially functionally get them ready for their bed, and then start rinse and repeat for the next day. And I definitely, I look at myself in those years and I have so much regret around how I parented, because I had no space for my children. I had children, but you're not given much space to for them to be integrated properly into your life in all of the ways in which they should be. But I had no space for myself, right? So the more I started to meet myself, the more I was like, I need to make space for my children. And I think when I started on this journey and was looking at attachment, I was like, oh God, I really wish I didn't know this now, because I regret some of the decisions that were made. But I also have so much compassion for so many of us women who are in, right? You're told you can have the career now, so go and get the career. But then also you're the only ones that can have the baby, so you have to have that as well. But you just have to figure out how to fit those beings into your existence. And invariably that means they get fitted into a very narrow, I can see you in the morning very quickly, but I'm rushing to get you out to your school on time, get me into work on time. I'm exhausted, so are you. So let's just get you ready for bed at night. And then you're too tired at the weekends to really be that present with them. And it almost became, they became just like little projects. Like when I was in that phase, definitely for the first half of my daughter's life. And I just feel, I feel desperately sad for that version of me, but I also feel so much compassion because I did not know another way. And it was only when I started to, it is, it's so true that when you start to meet the depth within yourself, particularly the shadow stuff, that you can meet that depth in your children. And you just become a different mother. But I don't, I still don't know what the solution is, right? I'm at the point in my building out this business that I need to start looking practically at finances and what that looks like. I've had the freedom over the last 2 years to be a mum. Whereas before, I think it was very much a like, yeah, I'm a mum, but also I'm a career woman and I'm all of these, I'm a wife. And it was all just a performance metric, which at times was inconvenient, if I'm really honest. I really only think I accepted the depth of what motherhood is when I went into like embodied work and understanding my own childhood and how that has an impact, had an impact on the first 40 years of my life, that I was like, oh God, this is a real big job. I wish someone had pulled me aside and said so. And you know yourself from doing the Gabor Mate training, that all of that is an unpacking of your past, which whilst it is developmental in its viewpoint, which is an inherent bias, but so much of it is formed there. And so I'm looking at my children going, oh God, have I already messed this up? Like, is it too late? Which can take you in a rabbit hole. And it did definitely at times in that training. But actually, when you look at how the brain works and how it's constantly shaping and forming and changing, like every day is another opportunity to meet them where they are, if you're willing to meet yourself where you are. Like the two go hand in hand. But it has been a ride. Sometimes it's felt like a war on two fronts, like trying to reparent myself and parent them. We all have different needs. It's like the Hunger Games. Like everyone's competing for like their own needs to be met, and it's not possible to meet all of their needs. Like it's just not. So you are going to drop the ball. But I think what's healing is being in my own space, healing spaces, like be it in community with the communities that you create or the retreats or one-to-one with a therapist, is it's to be met where you are with compassion. An attuned, attached person in safety, I'd say, is 90% of the healing.
Yeah.
to just be all of your ugly self, all of your ugly truth, like the mess of your humanity, and someone to not recoil,
yeah,
is so deeply healing. And I think that's all you need to do as a mum. Like, they come home from school and sometimes they are like the devil incarnate. Like, they are like, but they have been holding it together all day. I remember reading someone saying, you know, if your kids are really horrible to you, you should take that as a huge compliment, because they feel safe enough to be absolute monsters in your presence. And it's like, oh, that's a really lovely thing to say on paper. If you were not parented in that way, you have to reparent yourself in that way, in those moments where what you actually want to do is run away because your nervous system is jacked and you're triggered and you don't know how to handle it because you weren't parented that way. You don't have that blueprint.
Yeah,
that's not to make my parents wrong. They didn't have that blueprint, right? So the buck's got to stop somewhere. So it can feel like a lot, but my ability to be present with them, to experience their joy, to witness them for their own selves, to be much more aware of like what I don't want to pass on to them, and to just meet them where they are, is so much bigger because I've met myself where I am with compassion. That's not to say it's not challenging. I still find it really challenging when my daughter hits peak anger and she's gliding into preteens, so we are just cranking it up. Because we were never met in our anger, right? Do you ever remember someone going, great, I can really understand why you're angry? No, I was slapped on the legs or sent to my room or told to stop. Like, no one's validating your anger. And I still find that really hard when she's really angry. I'm like, oh, I can feel it in my whole body. But it's such an opportunity for both of us to meet both of our anger as women, to be like, yeah, there are things that you're allowed to be angry at. Like, look at what the state of the world is.
Yeah. I'm honestly so in awe of you, because I sometimes have these moments of like having jumped off the train of banking, doing this work now. I sometimes am like, running a business and doing personal healing work at times can be a lot. Add in having children, and I honestly, when I think about, and I'm 36, so it's like this whole thing of like, Lucy, you need to make a decision about what you're gonna do, and I'm terrified, because honestly I'm like, oh my god, like the responsibility of bringing humans into the world, and also probably because there's a part of me that likes to perform, that I'm so enlightened and I know that having kids, like when I hang out with my nieces and nephews, sometimes I'm like, well, you're very annoying. You're very annoying. Wow.
Gift. It's a ride. Yeah, but I agree with you when you said at the beginning, like, it's just not taken seriously enough. And I think my folks just survived. Of course they did. Like, we grew up in Bolton in the 80s with Thatcher at the helm, and it was very working class. My mum had two jobs. Like, she was not sat down going, which part of my shadow am I projecting onto my children? No, we were surviving. So in lots of ways, I'm delighted you're terrified, because it means you'll take it seriously and you'll see it for what it is, which is this unbelievable gift, but also like the biggest responsibility, and it will take you on your own journey as well. There's nothing like a three-year-old punching you in the face to make you to make you meet your shadows and your triggers, and yeah, just opportunities to meet yourself.
I'm like, what has it taught you about womanhood?
Oh man, I look at my daughter and the freedom she has in her body, and I'm in awe of her. And I think that's how we're born. We're born knowing how to emote, how to scream about our needs, how to be present, how to be in our body. And for me, that's where I'm trying to get back to. And I know, looking at her, like particularly my daughter, just because she's another woman, I know it's possible. And I also can see how she's not had some of the things that happened to me happen to her. The result in her is just so liberating to watch her, of like, this is what it should feel like in your body. Does that mean she's like this goddess character who doesn't have any challenges? No. But the freedom within her, I can see it so clearly. And the, I was talking with a mum friend yesterday, actually. If you look at just the emotional cycle, a bit like the stress cycle, it's just your body needs to be allowed to go through that cycle of like, I'm angry, let me feel into this anger, let me experience it. And sure, correct the behaviors, like don't punch the dog or don't rip stuff off the wall, which both of those things have happened. But like, understand the anger. Yeah, of course you're angry about that. I would be too. But we just weren't allowed to go through what is a normal process of experiencing our truth in that moment. And in that moment, I'm angry or I'm sad or I'm happy. Like, let me just ride this out and see how this feels in my body. And it really has taught me so much about how I became this 44-year-old with all of these things and because of what I experienced, as well as obviously the biology, environment. Mm. But that freedom is, you talk about the liberated life, like freedom within, I think, is the state we are all trying to get back to.
100%.
And I think we're born with it. Looking at my children, I'm like, we're born with it. What happens to us that we're told not to be like that?
It's, I love that you brought this in, this piece about your daughter, because I remember earlier in the year, I went to this concert when I was still living in South Africa in this park, and there was a little girl who was probably like 7, and there's like a lot of people sitting on this lawn, like having picnics or whatever. And she was standing, like doing cartwheels, like shaking her bum, like really like sassy, like strutting around. And I was like, oh my God, that is what we're all trying to get back to.
Yeah.
Like that is the essence of like, of aliveness that runs through women, and we've lost it.
Yeah.
And I remember having this moment after I'd left banking, and I'd been doing a lot of body work before I left. So I like was really into breath work. I'd done my yoga teacher training. I'd done various body-based therapies, and like my energy was starting to come back. Like not like energy as in I'm less tired, like my vital life force was coming back. Not that I had the language around that. I didn't know what it was, but I just started to feel more alive. And I went to Croatia, and it was during the pandemic, and Croatia at that time you were allowed to go to and didn't have all the tests or whatever. And I got in the sea, and this is someone who, like, I was a robot. Like when I look back, I was so emotionally constipated. I was so tight in my body. I couldn't, dancing, absolutely not. Like being seen in any way, absolutely not. It was like so robotic. And I got in the water, and I just remember it so clearly that I started like flapping my arms like a 5-year-old. You know when a 5-year-old is like jumping up and down, like flapping as if they've got wings? Amazing. This is when I was like 20. No, I wasn't 29. I was like 31. And I was in the sea like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I was like, oh my God, this is who I am. Yeah. Like, this is what I've been trying to get back to. And I've just spent the last 30 years being like, well, the sea's a bit cold. Or like, this is nice. This is enjoyable. I am a robot that goes to work and works for a bank, and I have no personality or emotionality.
Yeah.
And I would take the weird waves of mania that I sometimes find myself in now versus my robotic self.
I completely agree, but that's how we're programmed. Like, I think it's getting better in schools just from listening to what, you know, they talk about the different zones of colours, of emotions and... But fundamentally, it's still like sit in this chair and we'll learn by rote and you'll do this. Like my son comes holding me, he does what we call shuttle runs. He has to just run up and down because he's like, you've made me constrict for the entire day. Yeah. I now need to like expand out back into my body. Both of my children do that and it's amazing. But I think it's the same in a corporate environment. Can you imagine if you were like, oh my God, look at the color of that sky. They'd be like, I think you need to take some time off. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, good luck and thanks. Like, you have to be disassociated in some of those environments. You would not survive.
No, it's a healthy mechanism to be able to cope, really, to completely dissociate.
Yeah, for sure. And in some environments, I remember speaking to someone when I was doing my thesis, a psychologist, and she was like, there are some clients I will not get into their body. Like I can't get them into their body and then send them out into the environment they currently live in.
No.
It's like, oh God, yeah. Like the unbelievable privilege to be allowed to feel again. Mm. Because I'm in a safe enough environment to do that now.
Yeah. No, exactly. it does. I'm just like internally slightly laughing at the like now in some of the spaces that I find myself in, which at times can be quite like wild female expression, which if I think back to the version of myself that would stand in the corner of a room and like robotically talk to people whilst pissing myself because I had my weird bladder thing that I didn't realize was wrong with me, I now I'm like, okay, I don't know how I've gone from there to here, but anyway, the like wildness and feral insanity that's inside women, and every woman has it. Like it takes a little while to tap into it. Every single woman has it. And here we have all these women like marching into their corporate jobs and sitting at desks and doing their thing. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh God, we just need to become the little girl in the park, sassily shaking her bum.
Yeah. And being celebrated for that. Cause it's in that moment, that's what your body really wants to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So having been on this wild journey that you've been on, how do you now define success? And maybe you don't have a specific definition, but how would you encapsulate success for you now?
I think it's, for me, it's about just being free to be authentic in yourself. Like there's a real drive for me to be like all of these metrics which define success. But actually none of it really mattered on the inside. And so the ability to now just be authentically myself and at peace with that feels like such a huge win, because that's not where I was. I was performative, shooting for something on the outside. It feels really different to live that way.
What does authenticity mean to you?
Just being honest about life and like the parts, particularly shadowy parts or the hard parts or bits that people don't want to talk about because it's less than or it's not shiny, be that in a marriage, be that in motherhood, be that in a job. I think we're more than just this one mask we all put on and the exhaustion at trying to keep that on and not have the honest conversations of like, well, this feels rubbish. Who's with me? And when you start to have more of those honest conversations, you find everyone's with you, but no one feels like it's safe enough to have those conversations. And yeah, I think it's having the authenticity to say, this is hard and I don't really know what I'm doing and that's okay.
I love that.
Because I just don't think we would have been given permission.
No.
So you have to give it to yourself.
And there's such a like beautiful humanity to it. Of like, we're all in this really weird experience of being human where none of us really know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And some people have skills in certain areas and others have skills in other areas. And can we all meet each other in the madness of it?
Yeah, and the mess, right? None of us, I think there's so much, it's so enticing to look at these reels on Instagram. It's so enticing. Like these people look like they've got it all sorted. And yes, I am delighted for people's what I call on stage life. But really for me, the real depth is backstage. Like when you take off the costume and what does your life feel like? What does it look like? What does it feel like? And can you be honest about that?
Yeah.
Like there's so much freedom in that, I think, and life becomes less heavy.
Yeah.
And you can be like backstage, a bit bumpy at times. How about we talk about that? And you don't feel so alone. I think lots of this work I've done like with one-to-one, but actually when you put yourself in a community as well and people are really willing to take off the masks, oh, it's so gorgeous. You're like, oh God, we're all just messy humans with our stuff. And I really feel like we have it wrong with all of these like small pods we're creating. If you think back to how like this, the tribe, like where's your village? We really need the village.
Yeah.
And I think in the way society is structured, we're losing our village and we're losing ourselves as a result.
I had this weird realization the other day, which seems it's bizarre because it's one of those things that encapsulates all the work I've been doing for years, but it just, the way it came through my mind felt very clear that it was like my model of adulthood growing up was that you have all your shit together.
Oh, like, yes.
That there are never any issues. Everything's all nice and buttoned up and successful and good. So when I come into adulthood and I'm like, wow, for me, this is pretty stressful. And I don't really, at times I'm like, where am I going? And money and like countries and visas and trying to figure all of this stuff out. But I never saw that. So yeah. It feels really, to your point about being in communities, like it's one thing going into a session with someone one-on-one and sharing it and the person like lovingly holding you, but you can still sometimes have this thing of like, is this just me? Like sometimes yeah. I say to therapists, like, is this actually just me? Like, or are there other people experiencing this? Whereas when you're in a community of people that are open, it's like, oh my God, we're all doing this.
Yeah.
Like we're all in this mm-hmm. together. And mm-hmm. I at times struggle in my own work now to make sure that I like in some ways come across that way, because I can't bear the idea that anyone puts me on a pedestal that somehow I'm like enlightened. So I'm like, I'm a human.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
still struggling with stuff. Like I may be a few steps ahead with various things because I've had a bit more time to do this work, but like I'm still dealing with my own demons. I yeah. still have support. I still like have days where I'm like, this is terrifying. That's part of being human.
Yeah, for sure. I think not enough is said. I think it's being said more. Mm. Sure. I went on LinkedIn for the first time a few months ago. I think I said this to you and I was like, oh, there's like a quiet shift of women going, this is not working, people. Let me wave the white flag. And I was like, oh, how refreshing. I think it's gone the other way since. But anyway, I think there's more willingness coming of people being like, this, the way we're living is not working, and pretending that this is all okay is no longer a viable option. Mm. And yeah, that just wasn't our parents' experience. Like they're keeping up with the Joneses, facade, all of that. Mm. And when actually now as a mother, reflecting on my own mother for the time I had her, of like, oh God, she was just a human, you know, of like, she was dealing with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
She was just a human trying to figure it out and doing her best. And mm. I think that's all we're all trying to do. But the more we deny that, the harder it will become. Mm. Whereas you go into these spaces of women, and God, I hope they're coming for men if they're not already there, mm. where you can lay it down and be like, oh God, it looks like this in reality. Mm. And how, what a relief that is.
Such a relief.
What a relief. Hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Beautiful. I have one final question for you that I ask everybody. What does living a liberated life mean to you?
Ooh, I probably should have thought about this. A liberated life for me is like by design, by conscious design. So choosing a way to live that works within whatever my context is at the moment. So I'm choosing to want to be more available for my children. I'm choosing to want to have space for my own healing. I'm choosing to want to work with people to support them in their own healing journey. Like those are all conscious choices. Mm. And that doesn't mean that it's all sunny. Some of those choices are really hard and they have different consequences. But it's so liberating to be free enough to choose that mm. and to figure out, I'm not going to know all of the answers here and that's okay too, rather than what felt like a prison of performance mm. in a very narrow view of what success looked like.
I love that. It reminds me of, there was a book that I read when I first started studying to become a coach, and it was saying like, as a coach, you have to be willing to support someone to make decisions that are in line with their values, even yeah. if the client hates you for it.
Yeah.
And like, that is the essence of it, right? It's like, yeah. okay, some of these decisions are hard. It wasn't easy to leave banking. I'm sure it wasn't yeah. easy to leave your job.
No.
It's like, but it's the right path based on what my system is telling me.
Yeah.
And if I ignore that signal, like, it's like a death, like yeah. you said earlier.
Yeah, 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 for yeah. sure. Yeah.
And if people would like to find you and find out more about your work and what you do, where can they find you?
I'm just on Instagram at the moment. So Embodied Release with Kat is my handle. So find me there.
Beautiful. God, it's been such a joy to have this conversation. I came into the space a bit like wobbly this morning because I'm like a bit all over the place currently, but I feel so grounded and so warm in my heart. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Here. It was lovely. It was really nice.
Now, was that not just the biggest dream of an episode? I came off of it being like, oh my God, I feel so calm and connected and just, yeah, connected to our beautiful humanity. So I hope you enjoyed it too. It's such a joy to have you guys here with me. I honestly am so grateful that you tune in. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would mean the absolute world to me if you could rate, review and subscribe. And if you could share an episode with a friend, if there's one that you particularly enjoyed. Sending you so much love. I will speak with you soon and I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.